The Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Thursday, June 26, 2003, and we are in work session on House Bill 5052, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And Mr. Bender, can you lay out what we will be working on today?
Yes, Madam Chair, members. Today you're going to be wrapping up the work sessions that you'll be doing at this point in time for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget. There are still a few items left that you have not gotten to yet. But before that, at the request of the committee, we invited Marilyn Sathoff from the governor's office. She's his higher education policy advisor, to come and speak on the governor's Access Scholarships for Education Trust proposal. And she has kindly agreed to do that and is available for
Ms. Sathoff, if you would be so kind. Good morning and welcome.
Morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marilyn Sathoff. I am the governor's higher ed policy advisor. I'm also his general counsel. I understand that you have some desire to have an understanding of Senate Joint Resolution 28 and Senate Bill 644. I have prepared some testimony to walk you through, give you an overview of the bill, or if that's acceptable, or you can, if you just have questions, we could do that as well. Would you like me to give you an overview?
Yes, that would be very helpful. Thank you. And committee members, please feel free to interject with questions and clarification issues as we go along.
Definitely. Senate Joint Resolution 28 seeks to establish a constitutional fund dedicated to providing tuition assistance for Oregon students to attend an in-state post-secondary school. Assistance will be based on financial need. The fund will be called ASSET, the Access Scholarships for Education Trust, and is intended to provide a long-term funding solution to opening the doors of our post-secondary schools to all Oregon students who desire to attend them. ASSET is an omnibus fund. That means it can take money or property from any source and then invest those funds. But the corpus of the trust remains intact, protected by the Constitution. Only the earnings can be distributed to fulfill its mission: need-based access. Senate Joint Resolution 28 also dedicates certain specified monies to the fund, beginning in fiscal year 05-07, if it is passed by a vote of the citizens of Oregon. These dedicated funds include interest earnings on tuition payments to the Oregon University System. Those interest earnings currently remain with the general fund. Interest earnings on the support fund to the community colleges.
Ms. Sathoff, do you have any idea with relation to the interest on tuition payments that's currently going into the general fund, how many dollars we're talking about there?
The estimates we've received are about $5 million a biennium.
Okay.
So that would be about $2.5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Interest earnings on the support fund that goes to the community colleges. I have an estimate for that number as well.
Where is that currently going?
General fund.
It also is going into the general fund. And you don't have an estimated?
I do. That looks like it would be about $1.5 million to $2.5 million a year.
So $5 million for the biennium?
$5 million for the biennium. And 5% of the personal gains tax and 5% of the corporate income and excise tax on capital gains. Those
so 5% of personal and corporate capital gains, okay, which is virtually nothing right now.
a few months ago, the projection on that for the personal corporate gains at 5% would have been about $7 to $10 million.
Per biennium?
No, a year.
Okay, so we're talking 14 to 20 per year, per buy.
Right.
Okay.
And then,
corporate?
About $750,000 per year.
So 1.5 for the biennium.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also a funding stream that currently goes into the general fund.
Yes.
Okay. So this totals up to about $25.5 million that will be coming out of the general fund.
For the biennium.
For the biennium.
Right.
Thank you.
And I think that's probably...
What was that?
35.
Hmm? Well, that's...
31.5. At the top end?
At the top end.
At the top end, I've been determining this by year, and at the top end, I've been saying somewhere between 10 and 15 per year. So that's probably accurate. And I haven't done the math for the biennium. I've been doing it annually.
So 21.5 to 30.
You're in the wrong business.
To the general fund.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
There is one other source of dedicated money, but I can't give you a figure on that because the bill addresses it as monies received by agreement from private institutions. The fund establishes that it's possible for private post-secondary institutions, private nonprofit post-secondary institutions, to contribute to the corpus through an agreement. Obviously, we could not dedicate money from those institutions because they're private institutions at this time, but they could reach an agreement with the state where they agreed to contribute to the corpus.
And then I understand that there also is a funding stream around donations from businesses and other entities.
Right, definitely. As I said, the asset trust fund is able to take money from any source. That would include donations. It would include, grants. Any possible federal, state, private source it could take an asset from. The trust will be managed by the state land board. The board has rulemaking authority and will be able to transfer any portion of the assets earnings. Just the earnings, to a public or private entity to fulfill the fund's mission. For example, the board could determine to send earnings to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to fulfill the mission of the trust, need-based access. The board could also send the earnings to a nonprofit entity for the sole purpose of leveraging that money to raise additional private money to increase the corpus of the trust. I want to remind everybody, asset is really a funding vehicle. It's a way to pull money in, protect the corpus, and spin off the earnings to fulfill the mission.
So may I ask then, based on the revenue assumptions that you have and given that you don't know how much is going to end up coming potentially in from the private sector, but if you've got $21.5 to $31.5 million plus some unknown amount, what do you expect to be able to do in terms of? I don't imagine that in today's interest climate that you're going to be generating very much from this amount of corpus, and so you must be looking at some kind of what the ability of this is to actually fund scholarships over a period of time. Do you have any information related to that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you are absolutely correct. This is a long-term solution. Today, in order to fulfill the governor's goal, which would be to fully fund the need-based access in Oregon, we would probably need to spin off earnings between $250 million to $300 million a year. Right now, I think...
So what would be required in the corpus in order to spin that off?
About $2.5 billion.
$2.5 billion?
Yes. This is a long-term solution. Also keep in mind the corpus gets protected, compounds interest. The idea is to generate a long-term solution to create a fund that over time will increasingly enable us to address the issue of access in Oregon and basically take it out of the equation for general fund money in terms of operating expenses.
Mr. Bender, based on the need to put $2.5 billion in this fund before it can generate significant interest earnings, and granted that, over time if things do change in unpredictable ways, but is there any way to do a quick and dirty analysis at this assumed growth rate plus maybe 30% for private donations? how many years it would take to get to that corpus level?
Well, if you're talking about $30 million deposits into this in the upcoming biennium, that, of course, we would expect to grow with the economy over time. But looking at that, and you're adding 30%, that would be $39 million a biennium. It would take 64 biennia to reach $2.5 billion.
So that's
would
like
be less
128 years?
It would be less, though, because we know that the deposits would grow.
It is a long-term proposal. Madam Chair, you have to think long-term and big here.
I'll say.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
By that time, it'll cover like about 1/50th of the tuition.
A couple of bakers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. First of all, the way the fund is established, they do not have to wait to achieve the $2.5 billion to address the need. At any point,
no,
it could start.
No, but the point needs to be made that the sooner you start pulling the earnings out, the slower the growth is on the corpus. Mm-hmm. So it's there's a hydraulic to it. Interesting. Anyway, just to get that on the table, please, I didn't mean to derail your presentation.
That's all right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to stress that, again, the governor's intent is to create a long-term solution to this. By no means did we believe this would fix the problem next year. In addition, this is also meant to augment the current structures of assistance to students. It's not meant to detract from those structures.
No, I'm sorry. Representative Smith has a question, and so does Senator Borden.
Senator, go ahead.
Senator, please.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for being here to answer our questions about the governor's proposal. Could you be more explicit about the links between the governor's proposal and the existing Oregon Student Assistance Commission? A concern I have is whether this proposal duplicates efforts that are already existing, and the governor's view on that. And the additional concern would be how did the governor look at strengthening the existing Student Assistance Commission as opposed to creating another vehicle? Just help me understand that.
Certainly. Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, first of all, these two systems are not overlapping. They're distinctly in structure different. This is an investment fund. The Oregon Opportunity Grant, per se, is not an investment fund. General fund money passes to it that has been used for the purposes of granting. This, again, is intended to develop an investment in the state. So those vehicles are different. Now, with respect to your question about the link, there's no express link in the bills. However, there's clearly a link in the sense that this fund disperses the earnings to an entity to fulfill the mission. At this time in the state of Oregon, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission is a vehicle that clearly has the apparatus available to disperse and fulfill that mission.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
But is that spelled out in the bill?
Is the
Oregon Student Assistance Commission referenced in the bill? As a vehicle?
No, it is not.
Senator Gordley, you have a handout or a letter from the Student Association, the Oregon Student Association. It has attached to it the amendments that the governor is proposing be added to SJR 28.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, if you do have that and you want to take a look at section paragraph 1, section 9, subset 5, and that would be lines 17 through 26, that's the authority to disperse.
Can you give that reference again?
Sure. It's paragraph 1, section 9.
This is on SJR 28.5.
SJR 28.
And what we're looking at is the Dash 5 amendments. Is that what you're referencing?
Yes, sorry, okay. Dash 5. And that would be lines 17 through 26.
On which page?
Page 2. subset 5. The State Land Board may disperse earnings on monies and properties in the trust to public and private entities to enable Oregon residents, based on the financial needs of the residents, to gain access and so on. Clearly, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission is an entity that this fund could disperse earnings to. The reality is right now, they're probably one of the few entities that exist that have the apparatus to fulfill the mission of this fund. But there is no express reference to them in the bill.
Well, Senator Gorby, I know that Representative Smith has a similar question about the land board, so I'll just punt to her.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. It doesn't matter. Why the state land board and who is on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith. The state land board, really the governor's thought in that is that that's the same board that manages at a high level the common school fund. The state land board is the governor, the treasurer, and the secretary of state.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is not going to be a group that reviews applications and decides what individual gets a grant. They'll be managing a fund. That's the entity that manages the Common School Fund. In the investment part of both of those is managed by the Oregon Investment Council.
Follow up, Representative.
I have several questions.
Just go for it.
Okay, well, thank you. Regarding the interest earnings on tuition payments.
You just don't want to sit between us?
No.
Yeah. You know, there's another bill out there that the Oregon University System and the university sponsored to take those interest payments and put them back at the so the university system could keep their own interest on them. And the thinking behind that would be because this legislature has said many times that, you know, the university systems need to be more entrepreneurial, need to be run like a business, but yet, you know, we don't let them have their interest earnings. So how have you talked to the university system and the presidents to see if they want their earnings taken and put over here on this other deal that you want to do?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, we have. In fact, the Chancellor spoke in support of this bill at the testimony on Tuesday to Senate Revenue, the hearing. They understand intuitively that their interest earnings on tuition payments going to this fund would be an investment.
Okay, what about the Chancellor spoke on it, but did we get university presidents in favor of that, or did he represent all seven of them?
He does represent all seven, but mm-hmm. President Frommeyer also delivered a written letter in support of the bill the same day.
Okay. My other question is, you have private colleges and universities. What I don't understand from a profit perspective why they would want to be in this fund. I don't understand how that's mm-hmm. going to help them any better than the student assistance program. They could take their mm-hmm. own funds, I think, and use them better within their own private system.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think that's quite possible. Again, they may see a benefit in being involved in a fund, particularly if this fund grows faster than what has been discussed in this session. There is an element here that we haven't focused on, and I would like to relay a statement made last Saturday by the AEA. This concept of a 30% from private, that's really a hypothetical figure. We have no idea, no way of knowing what private entities might step up to this fund. In particular, at a dinner of the AEA on Saturday night, they made a statement that they would commit the proceeds of their annual event to this fund every year. There's a lot of business interests out there. And with respect to private institutions, it would be a business deal for them. If they believed that there would be a large enough benefit, or even a very risky venture, but a benefit at the back end, that they might receive additional students in this manner, they may very well agree to step up and contribute to the corpus. You're right, they may not. They may see that they have other avenues that public universities do not have that they can use. On the other hand, again, the governor believes, and as I do, that we're seeing a lot of interest in the business community about assisting in this manner. In particular, AOI testified on Tuesday as well in support of this bill, and their statement was that even though they have been opposing the capital gains tax, for a fund of this nature, they would consider and did support the 5% going to this fund.
Well, Follow-ups here. A couple things. I think we have a large private sector donation pool in this state, and Ford family is just one that comes to mind because they've been so gracious. And it seems to me that we're doing quite a bit with that already. I'm not sure how this would offer an additional incentive for privates, but, you know, maybe that's to be seen. Regarding the 5% on personal and capital gains, you know, there's a lot of talk about doing away with that.
Yes.
So if we were to run a bill to the governor in some form that would do away with capital gains,
mm-hmm.
makes me wonder if he would veto it in favor of keeping his plan here.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I believe the governor testified on Tuesday, and I'll reiterate that. He's very open to the funding mechanisms here.
Okay.
Yeah. It isn't. The concept was to identify the beginnings of a corpus.
I see.
All right. It wasn't to tie to any particular funding mechanism. These funding mechanisms made some rational sense to us. First of all, they had to do with some of the entities that would benefit from this fund, the interest earnings from the universities, interest earnings from the support fund. Second of all, the capital gains had a relationship for him in that the business community is often very outspoken in their support for post-secondary education. There was clearly a message being sent with that dedication. However, we're very open to other funding mechanisms.
I'm wondering if later on if the private university system is going to testify, Gary Andine in particular, on this bill.
Senator Gordley, did you finish the line of questioning that you were on?
For the most part, I am interested in hearing testimony or hearing from Mr. Andine as well, and also from Mr. Klim from the commission. I'd like to get their takes on the proposal.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that there were some concerns from the community college groups, and I see in this amendment that it's addressed. Have their concerns been totally addressed?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I would not like to represent for the community colleges, but I can tell you my perception. My perception is of their concerns, and they certainly, you know, are free to disagree. One, they seemed to be concerned about initially the original funding mechanism from the community colleges, and we clearly addressed that. The funding mechanism with respect to the community colleges now was at their suggestion. I also, on Monday, prior to the Tuesday hearing, offered them an ability to simply step out of the bill. We offered that we could do whatever they wanted to take them out of this entirely. And they, through their executive director of the OCCA, indicated they wanted to stay in the bill. Other concerns they had. At the testimony, they seemed to indicate one of their concerns is that the fund didn't reach out enough to their students. I had responded to that saying, help us with a definition that will work for you on that. Another concern is the aspect of the private institutions in this. My only response to that is that clearly the Oregon Opportunity Grant, money through that grant goes to private institutions as well. All across the nation, there are funds established and systems established that go to private institutions. So I'm not quite sure how to address that issue for them. Their other concern was that they felt that if the governor was going to support putting money in this fund, they would rather see the money come to their programs. And again, that one's difficult for me to respond to in that it assumes that the 10 to 15 million we would put here would, in fact, if it didn't go here, go to the community college's programs. I'm not positive that's where that money would go. So I think those are the concerns, and I think that I've addressed them in the way I've answered to you.
Thank you.
Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a little late in the session for a major reform of the post-secondary funding system, and I might think of grassroots efforts around this, but the one concern I have in particular is if you're looking at going to the corporate world to get donations, has there been any analysis done of what That's liable to due to the money currently going to both private and public university foundations.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative March, I haven't done any analysis of what that might do to current donations. We have been vetting this with just interest level in the business community. The attraction I'm finding from the business community is, in fact, that it is a constitutional amendment. They feel as though that money then is in some sense, they're saying our donation gets dedicated and produces the results we see that we've agreed to in the amendment. It's the concept of pay for something that gets delivered exactly what they want in that. Now, I wanted to go back to your initial statement. This is not a restructure of the funding for post-secondary education.
Again, for the scholarship fund.
It's not actually a restructure of funding for the Scholarship Commission. It doesn't take any money away from the Scholarship Commission.
Building on Representative March's remarks that the private sector isn't a bottomless pit and that they already are making significant contributions in grants and to the university campuses and private scholarships and things like that. And I do wonder, I mean, the numbers that I asked Mr. Bender to run very quickly were if you assumed even a 30% match to the general fund funding stream coming out of the private sector, you're talking about something like $7 to $10 million in a biennium, which is a huge piece to ask that sector to step up to the plate in terms of increased funding to what they're already feeding in. Mm-hmm. So I would think that there would need to be some very careful thought put into here what the private sector would be able or be willing to contribute to higher education over and above what they're doing already. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that there is potential here to have an impact in that area.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I certainly am not disagreeing. I would add, however, that the private sector is very, very vocal about its support for post-secondary education and access. I think of a dedicated fund to an issue they're very concerned about that, you know, frankly, benefits them largely. I have some statistics on what it does for the private sector just to have an increase in access to post-secondary education. I think one of the figures is that over 40% of the jobs in the next 4 years will require a college degree. They distinctly get a benefit, and they understand the link between access and how it benefits their business. I think that while I certainly don't suggest that they're a bottomless pit, I think this fund has some attraction for them. Again, I don't know that 30% is the right amount. I don't know if that's too little, too much. I think that your point is well taken, that this may draw money from other sources, but that's going to happen in many ways. Business is always going to look at where they want to put their money. The more we can deliver what they're looking for, probably the more we're going to increase our chances of support and getting donations from them.
Why not, Senator Cornfield? Thank you, Madam Chair. Why not focus on what we already have in the Student Assistance Commission and strengthen that as opposed to starting something new and doing what could be considered fragmenting our efforts? Why not strengthen what we have, which is also focused on access?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, again, I simply have to go back to the distinction between a pass-through expense on the state and an investment that builds over time. That's the distinction. Again, the governor is trying to create a long-term funding source, not a continuous expense of general fund money being passed through. Certainly not trying to denigrate from that, but looking ahead in the future and saying we need to solidify, create a stable, consistent source. Right now that source isn't stable and consistent, as you all know from looking at the history of the general fund money going to the Oregon Opportunity Grant.
If I might Go ahead, Representative Bates.
Just a couple of questions. Just from your last statement, I mean, the problem isn't OSAC and Opportunity Grant, stable funding. If you want to establish the kind of fund, which I'd agree with, why not run it through OSAC and Opportunity Grant? Why set up the State Land Board? And, I mean, I just see that ripe with all kinds of political problems. I can just see that money, as it actually develops, being up for grabs. I can see the chancellor's wanting it, the president's wanting it. They want to run the money through their own programs. You know, like I said, private colleges getting involved and fighting with the public college, public universities and colleges. I just see you're getting into a land war in Asia, which you don't want to get into. Stabilize the money and get the Oregon Opportunity Grant would be the logical way for me to look at this, at least, and let those students make their own decision about whether they want to go to university, college, or whatever. You may have to change what the Oregon Opportunity Grant does from the point of view of opening it up to technical institutions and short-term programs, but that can be done. That just seems strange. The other thing that seems strange to me is to graduate from Oregon public or private high school or obviously be home taught. You can come into this state your last year of high school and get this and be here for, or be here for 11 years and your folks move you out of state for 1 year and come back and you're not, you don't have an opportunity to take part in this. That just seems strange to me.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I absolutely agree. And in fact, one of the discussions that we're having for an amendment is how do we address the latter issue you raised, that the idea is access, and it isn't tied to graduating from high school here necessarily. So we're looking at how to amend to deal with that issue. On your former issue, I don't believe that we have any opposition to having a more express link with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I would say that we would also like to keep some flexibility in terms of the example I provided earlier of potentially leveraging this money with a 501c3 foundation, not to dispense, but to perhaps provide a block to, with the condition, leverage this five times out of the private sphere for us, a professional fundraising organization. All right. But in terms of the actual dispersal to fulfill the need-based mission, I think we have no issues if that were suggested to us.
I'm sure.
I have some issues that I'd like to raise here. And this is just kind of a laundry list of things that I've put together as we've discussed the issue here. I'm really concerned about the time frame that we're talking about before the corpus of the fund will be in a place where it can do any kind of significant things for the higher education community, the students in the state. And I'm wondering if you have had them do any kind of cash flow analysis or pro forma analysis out in time about what this is going to look like and how long it's going to take before this will be able to reasonably disperse money.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the funding mechanisms itself were in flux up until Tuesday, primarily because the community colleges had not identified much for me what they were interested in doing until very late. So I have not done that pro forma. Again, some of this is very in flux, as you know, from the donation, private, so on. I've certainly, now that if we assume that there's some agreement on the funding mechanisms, we can certainly do that pro forma, and I'm happy to ask BAM to help me with that.
Well, I would submit to you that I think that the ability of the structure of this to fund scholarships in a meaningful way is very critical to whether the policy discussion should go forward or not, and that certainly there should be an analysis done of the ability of the fund to perform before people commit to whether this should go ahead or not. So I would very strongly urge you to get some kind of a framework around that side of the discussion. And I'm also curious to know that if this was a point of discussion when the policy issue was being discussed with Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Council and those kind of folks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, it was on the latter question. On the former, again, as an endowment fund, you have to start somewhere. The option for what you're telling me is that we don't do any investment, we don't do funds of any nature. Again, in terms of the funding mechanisms, certainly if we thought the market and our situation was such that we would be able to dedicate lottery money as we did in the education endowment fund, we might do that. So that's not the framework at this time in the market. There are a number of funds that are established by the state. One is the Education Endowment Fund. I guess at that point we could have said at that time, this is going to take us forever to achieve our purposes, so we'll never establish any kind of an endowment fund.
Well, and I would submit to you that if we are in a situation where the only alternatives are not to go ahead at all or to go ahead with this proposal, then we probably are in a lot of trouble. And I think that having a discussion around the probability and reasonable scenarios that we can expect that are laid out in a reasonable and logical way add to the ability of the policymakers in the process to make valid and legitimate policy decisions.
Madam Chair, I've been asked to go to the co-chair's office.
Yes, please.
First, I'd like to make a statement, if I might, and then ask a question. In our natural resource subcommittee, we're dealing with Division of State Lands and the State Land Board, and I can tell you that there is concern about the management of the Common School Fund and the income to the Common School Fund. We know that the expenses of the Division of State Lands is really borne by the Common School Fund. We've seen the net proceeds from the State Forest, the Elliott State Forest, and other sources of funds decreasing over time. Part of that's due to the markets and the economy, but part of it's due to management. So I have a concern there, and I think other legislators, at least on our committee, also have a concern. The question I have for you, though, is why are we doing this now? I can understand maybe approaching something like this in the good times, but to take millions of dollars out of the general fund at this point just does not make a lot of sense to me at all.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, try to take those in two parts. I've logged your concern about the State Land Board. I'll certainly convey that to the governor. I don't have an answer to you on that one. On your second issue, why are we doing this now? I guess I would try to give you the answer that the governor gave on Tuesday. First, this is an issue that he has been advocating for several years. He's talked about this idea for a long time. This has been, I think for him personally, access has been an issue that he's cared about throughout his career, trying to figure out how do we stop this spiral downward and turn this around. Why do it at this time? Again, I think his concept is, this is the time to, this is an investment. We talk about growth and the economy. He believes this is one more step in helping that out. If we can get people to college that want to go to college that right now have a financial barrier to going, we create an educated workforce that in fact increases the revenues of the state. I think that is part of his mood of, this is something that fits with what we need now, even though the market is like this. I also think he believes that there is a real effort out there in the private sphere to want to address this issue, even in the midst of all this. I recall that one of his statements on Tuesday was that, you know, why now? Well, because now's the time to invest. It's also a time to say to higher ed, we do value higher ed. Higher ed tends to be, and I include the community colleges in that, tends to be at the bottom of the list in tough times. You have K through 12, you have public safety, public health. These entities are at the bottom of the list. He's saying, let's find a way to stop making them at the bottom of the list.
What's at the bottom of the list?
He believes that in terms of making legislative decisions on and just decisions about the budget, that generally the priorities are K through 12, public safety, and health, as they should be. And what he's trying to say is that let's try to find a way to also help us prioritize post-secondary education in Oregon.
Interesting. If I might continue with the issues, the time frame of this and the ability of the fund over time to deliver what the vision is very concerning to me. The general fund impact is also very concerning to me, and one of the things that we're grappling with right now are the constitutionally mandated fund spending streams that are in the budget. And I think all of us have experienced frustration as we've served in the Ways and Means process that we're having to deal with constitutionally mandated spending demands that we, given the climate that we're in right now, probably wouldn't be making as policy decisions in this building. And I would very much hope that there would be a robust discussion around constitutionally mandating a spending direction for more general fund money and the implications that has, because all of these costs roll up from biennium to biennium. And as we continue to take away our ability to fund, to use this fungible money in fungible ways, it puts huge constraints on what we can and can't do to respond to funding needs in the state of Oregon. And so there is definitely that policy piece that needs to be addressed here. I also have shared the concerns that Senator Gordley has brought forward concerning OSAC being not having a place in the discussion here. And I would hope that, I mean, you have an agency here who, from the look that I've had at the way that they operate, appears to be very successful and is very focused on a criterion-based, very fair disbursement of the funds that they have. And I think that it would be very much worth a policy discussion around using an existing state agency that has a successful and proven track record rather than going out into the private sector and, again, pulling more money out of the earnings or the corpus to pay for those services that the state buys. So I hope that that would be an issue that is discussed also. The issue of access, I think, is an important one, because one of the things that we've been looking at as a committee is what is available to this people, the children, the kids that come out of the K-12 system and are looking at opportunities in higher ed. And we have found a rather broad-based series of programs that are available to people that are interested in increasing their education. And the student assistance grants or the opportunity grants are one big piece of that. There also is a very robust tuition remission program that takes place on all the college campuses that takes away the cost of tuition for a targeted group of students, and a huge piece of that targeting are students that are that find financial challenge when they're coming into the system. There also are a very robust bunch of private grants and scholarships that are out there. There's also federal Pell grants, and there's the loans that are available under the Perkins program. So I would also ask that in the context that the debate's taking place here, that the variety of things, and I'm sure my list isn't complete, but the broad spectrum of opportunities for funding issues in higher ed are laid on the table, and that this fund is placed in that context. And that, I think that given the amount of time that it's going to take for the fund to grow to any place where it has a significant impact, that it needs to be seen as a possible additional piece. And we need to have a debate around adding that additional piece at this point in time using the funding streams that have been outlined so far today. I think also, just to build on Senator Messerly's comments with relation to the Common School Trust Fund, that those of us that have worked on natural resource issues and school funding issues are well aware of the mechanics of that fund and the formula by which the earnings are dispersed out of it, and recognize that when we went through the period of time where the fund was earning a high rate of interest, there was also a great deal of pressure on the fund to disburse more of the interest earnings and not hold them back to grow the corpus. And I would imagine that the same thing would be true in relation to this fund that the governor is proposing to have established here, and that we recognize the pressure that will be on those funds and the reality of the funds to grow and the ability of them to have a significant impact. I think that all of us are well aware that the Common School Trust Fund, even though that fund's been in place for a very, very long time, does not contribute in a very significant way to the funding of education in the state. And with that, I believe, Senator, did you have more to say?
If we have completed the testimony, and I'm not sure that we have because we've taken you off track a couple of times, again, I'm very interested in hearing the perspectives of Mr. Klim from the commission. Yes.
And I would be
and
very
also Mr. Andy.
We have.
Thank you very much.
Representative Bates.
Just a couple of quick comments. Some of the very points you've made make me think this might be a good deal. Let me tell you why. The legislature at this juncture in our history in this state is I think just one step above certain types of salesmen in our society as far as trust is concerned. Fungibility of monies makes people very, very anxious about what we're doing up here. What you're really talking about, I believe, in this bill and this possible change to the Constitution is setting up a trust fund that businesses via probably charitable contributions, mm-hmm. and probably through organizations that are tax deductible, could drop large sums of money into this over a period of time, build a fund up to be something worthwhile, and those businesses might be more likely to do that if they knew exactly where that money was going.
Yes.
And that would mean that it did not flow through the legislature but went directly to a trust fund that we couldn't touch. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think to really make that, if that is really your goal, you need to change some things in here, and mm-hmm. the land board is one of them, because that opens right back up to the very thing you're trying to avoid. I think the chair is absolutely right. We have an organization, OSAC, which has a good track record, and I have confidence they could do a reasonable job with this. There would still be some political pressure on them, but at least you have some opportunity to see them do it in a way that, which is reasonably fair. And I think that's the real thrust of this. As I look at it and think about it and step back for a moment, what you're really looking for is the business community to step up and say, we're going to invest in higher ed in this state, and we're going to do it this way because we don't trust the legislature, but we do trust this going into this fund. When you get to the bottom line, I think that's where you're driving. Is that correct or incorrect?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that I would say it's partially correct. You're clearly correct that we are asking the business community to step up and support higher ed in a financial way. All right. What I would disagree with, I'm not sure it's a disagreement as much as the lawyer's view in me, and that is that at a constitutional level, you state high levels of purpose, and you don't try to tie your hands too tight when you're talking about a constitutional amendment. So I guess I would say it isn't to avoid the legislature. It is to create a statement for the state of Oregon about their commitment to higher education, community colleges, and access, and to by doing that, attract the private sphere to that mission. They talk a lot about being in favor of that mission, and I believe they are. I think this is a vehicle that will allow them to do that. If I could, yes, in part. If I could address just a couple of things that were mentioned by Chair Morgan and a couple of others. You are right that we're making a choice regarding our ability to deliver on access in terms of general fund money that is simply paid out versus general fund money that is invested. You're right there. With the question of constitutionally mandated demands, logged, I understand that. We have discussed it. We have discussed it with the Treasurer's Office. We will continue to discuss it, and I think it is clearly a policy discussion that I want you to know we have had and will continue to have. With the question that was raised about the commission, again, I think I said earlier, I reiterate that, we in no means were intending not to use the commission. Again, I think we're open to language about the commission in this bill. Our purpose was to make sure that we had other vehicles besides the commission, not necessarily to dispense the money, if we want to talk about it like that, but vehicles to raise the money. And if that is also the commission, that would be fine. We have no question that if that's an amendment that would help, that would be fine with us. With respect to the Common School Trust Fund and the Division of State Lands and the State Land Board, Logged will raise that. I understand perfectly. Again, it was a choice based on some similarity in structures in, with the Common School Fund, although I will say, Chair Morgan, that the similarity on the earnings, the political pressure obviously will always be there no matter what language we use on the earnings. But I believe that I specifically, we've specifically drafted language distinct from the Common School Fund on that issue. I'd be open to other suggestions if you had those as a way to remedy the issues there. I hope that I addressed almost everything that you raised.
Well, and one more point that I would just like to get on the record, that I can see why there would be some nervousness on the part of the community colleges, and I think potentially the Oregon University system too, because as we pull general fund out of the what we have to work with, that's the money that goes into the front end of both of those budgets. And so there, I think, easily could be the discussion in this building that if money's going to the back end, then why put it in the front end? Mm-hmm. And so there's another piece on the table. And with that, Representative March, you had some concluding remarks, and I would like to, Senator Gordley has asked to call forward the Private Colleges and Student Assistance Commission, and we do have other items to work
on. I'll make it short.
It's
a lot of, these are laudable goals, and nobody can argue with that.
Sure.
Access and strengthening the post-secondary education system is absolutely vital to this state. But we're not doing it here. What we're doing is reserving spaces on the Titanic, basically, because this goes to getting people in the door of a university system that you've done nothing to protect here, or a community college system. I would suggest you go upstream and strengthen the system as well, or instead, because all you're doing is saying, okay, we're going to pay for tuition for some people in the future, but the system may not have the strength, or I mean, they may not want to go there. So that's my parting comment. Thank you.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your comments, Representative March. With that, then, I will thank you very much, Ms. Sadoff, for coming forward here and kind of getting caught in a lot of the crossfire. I appreciate you giving us your time and your knowledge on the issue.
Thank you. Goes with the territory.
And could we have representatives from the Student Assistance Commission and the private colleges come forward?
All right. I like to avoid the legislature at all costs, so if you need someone, I'm willing to take that job.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for coming forward and helping us understand this proposal. And Senator Gordley has requested, I think, just your take on what you've heard here today and what is in the proposed amendment.
Sure. Thank you. For the record, my name is Brian Clennam, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I guess my first, you know, I really didn't follow a lot of this until yesterday. We're spending time at our orchard and been trying to run my computer business. So I went and listened to it on the internet, and I was able to meet with Marty Lynn yesterday and hear a lot of what you heard. What I don't want to do is, because there are problems with the details, discourage a governor who's really interested in access at this time, or has been and is really wants to bring it to the front. It's not that often that happens. It's what we think about all the time at the commission. And so when I hear someone at that level interested in it, it gets me very excited. So having said that, to the details, a lot of the things in the principles work really well already, because we're already doing them, I can tell you that. Raising and leveraging private money, we basically have donors who, essentially kind of what we're talking about here, donors who want to donate. For whatever reason, they don't want to just put it in the opportunity grant. they want to put their own name on it, have it have specific purposes, be protected so it couldn't be taken out. So they give it to us, and we keep it with the Oregon Community Foundation, and we raise private interest off of it, and then we do what they want with it. And it's not, you know, it's immune to you for it to come and grab it. So that works well. I can see why the governor would want a vehicle much like what we're doing with our donors, the Ford Family Foundation and some of our other donors, to do the same thing. A dedicated and protected source for access. Now, I would differ with folks who've been saying the legislature hasn't been doing a good job on access, or at least trying to, because last session we got an additional $5 million in the co-chair's budget. What everyone else is talking about losing, we're really being talked about, added, trying to recapture federal funds. And so I'm very appreciative. I'd like to thank you for you know, making a real commitment to our to the opportunity grant to the students. I know that it's the opportunity grant, you know, it's like me. It's 30 years old, not real sexy, chronically underfunded. so I know... I know it's able to be gotten after by the legislature. I love the idea of a constitutionally protected thing that then pours straight into the opportunity grant.
Yeah, that's got to be on the signing back.
So I guess my views are the idea and the principles, I don't want them stopped in their tracks. I don't want them, because of the bugs potentially in the details, stopped. We would love to be part of doing the work that the fund wants to have done. I'll set one up tomorrow. We could get it. We have our retiring person. She sets up a scholarship for one in one day. When a donor wants it, we set up all the rules and we get it to them right that moment before they change their mind. So I like it. I like the ideas, the principles behind it. I'd really like to you know, see it fleshed out better. I think that our donors, you know, it's like at the orchard when I see two pears, I got to knock one off at thinning time, and I worry that it would compete with the opportunity grant. I think there's a way to make that not happen. I think the good doctor has been pursuing that line of thinking. So I like that. I also like the idea of this magic tree that you can put nutrients into and the pests and the birds can't come get my fruit. That's very exciting to me. But, you know, let's chase that down. I know we're at the end of session and maybe that's not possible to do all that in this context, but let's not lose the momentum that the governor is starting.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Gary Ann Dean, the Executive Director of the Oregon Independent Colleges Association, representing all 17 of the nonprofit private colleges in the state of Oregon, roughly 30,000 students, and an active participant. Those students are active participants in the Opportunity Grant Program. Good place to pick up is where Brian left off. Let's not stop the momentum that the governor is turning onto this topic. It's well known throughout the regional and national professional banks of higher education analysts that higher education has been losing steam in state budgets across the United States for the last 30 years. It's getting less and less of the state pie, and it's getting less and less vis-a-vis the number of students and the number of needs that it's being asked to fulfill. The consequence of that dramatically this year across the country has been raised tuitions as state general funds dry up across the whole country for this. Higher education is in most state budgets the flywheel that that you turn to when you don't have enough money, and you say, well, higher education will have to raise tuitions. We need to find a solution, or this ship will indeed run aground. It's going to run out of water. The water has been drying up for 30 years, and you could look down the road 30 more years, and it's just not going to be floating. So we need to find solutions, and the governor has certainly raised a viable idea. Obviously, the devil is in the details, and a lot of people are very concerned about a lot of details, but this is an opportunity to engage, particularly in the themes that he's set. I think you've heard most of them. I'm just the ones that I've picked up that I think are worth pursuing and that we need to engage in conversation about during the next couple of years, probably. A dedicated investment fund is obviously very attractive for all the reasons you've heard this morning, and I won't repeat them. The idea of leveraging private resources from around the state is certainly a good idea. Oregon does this. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission does this better than any other state's Student Assistance Commission. You ought to be getting up and applauding this agency. This is one of the best-run agencies you will ever see in front of this committee, and it has been that way for many, many, many years. This program that the governor is proposing is need-based. That's critical. When you don't have enough public money to give everybody a low tuition, let's at least make sure that we're focusing our tax dollars on people who need public assistance, whether they be tax dollars or private donative dollars. It's very broad-based. The governor is very insistent that it include all citizens, whether they be attending a public or a private institution in the state. Obviously, we appreciate that in my sector, but we think that that's terribly important that students have those choices. Oregon has a rich blend of programs and types of learning environments, and we ought to be taking advantage of that and making that available to all of our citizens. And then finally, I think it aims at the right level of support. You heard Marty Lynn say this is going to take $2.5 billion to build a corpus that would essentially generate about $125 million a year at a 5% yield going towards need-based aid. $125 million is about where our opportunity grant program ought to be right now. But it's nowhere near that.
That's a very good point.
But those are the kinds, you know, we need to be thinking in those kinds of dollars if we're going to do this. If we don't do this, then we're going to continue to lose access, and we are losing access in Oregon and across the country, particularly for the lower quartile income Oregonians. It's become, if you want, we can bring in all kinds of statistics showing what's happening to those people and their opportunities, and this is where we need to be focused. So for all those reasons, we're very supportive of what the governor's trying to do. We want to encourage this conversation to continue. I'm not sure it's ready to be run out to the voters yet, just as it sits. I think there are a lot of very legitimate concerns that have been raised by you and by others around some of the details, but this is certainly an idea and a concept that we all need to be focused on. So that's where we're at. Yeah. This was not to be a public hearing today, so I did bring copies of the comments that we made in the public hearing 2 days ago. Over.
We would be very happy to give them to the members of the committee.
You bet.
Are there other questions or comments? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, both of you, for your comments. And to Brian, I just have to say again, I hope that I'm around. I hope we're around when you choose to run for public office. You have some remarkable...
Good way to ruin a life.
Well, I might add that when you choose to do that, I'm sure the comment that you made today is going to surface.
You know, remind him how... have to remind him at some point how he doesn't think he's very sexy, right?
That's right. Straight talk express right here.
Remarkable young...
Brian, I'd like to make a comment about your comment. It doesn't get better as you get older. The hair falls out. You know, things start to say... You become even more underfunded as you go along. So just hang in there. It only gets worse. You're at the high point right now.
Like the opportunity grant, at least I'm effective. That's about all I got.
I thought you were born
bald.
Thank
you, gentlemen. Very much appreciate having you talk to us today.
30
years old. You can just pass those up and down the row here. Thank you. Good discussion, committee.
Yes, it was very good.
I love the spelling.
Mr. Bender, can you take us through the issues that we have not yet covered in the Student Assistant Commission budget?
Certainly, Madam Chair. We still have a few items to wrap up on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget work plan. If you still have the buff sheet, colored sheet that we distributed to you the first day of the public hearing, you can see what those items are. But the first item I'd ask the subcommittee to consider is the review of the agency's performance measures.
Let's go right ahead.
If you, in the memo that we distributed to you on the first day of the work session, dated June 23rd, after the vacancy savings list, we did include information on the agency's performance measures, and those are in their memo. Since then, though, the agency has been working on additional performance measures that the subcommittee had requested during the public hearing, and those additional measures were distributed to you today, and they look like this. There's a sheet that says performance measure data summary. So I think we should look at that. And the first page is basically the performance measures that the agency already has. And the second page are additional performance measures that they are planning to establish or have established. I'm not sure exactly what the status of this is in response to your questions or to your comments, I should say, during the public hearing process. As you can see, the agency currently on the first page has seven performance measures. There are a couple things I'd ask you to note with these existing performance measures. The first performance measure, a percentage of eligible students who are awarded an Oregon Opportunity Grant. The way the Opportunity Grant program works, as you recall, is the commission determines the eligibility criteria and the legislature provides funding to provide grants under the criteria that the commission has established. Given that, this type of performance measure really doesn't represent a performance of the agency. It represents a funding level that's being provided into the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program.
But I do think, Mr. Bender, that in terms of, I mean, it is a measure of performance, not just of the agency, but as of the system as a whole. And these are the kind of performance data pieces that help us manage.
Okay.
And so I would hope that people wouldn't look at this as success or failure on the part of the Student Assistance Commission, but I think it gives us a valuable tool in managing how effective the whole program is.
Okay.
And I think we need to be very clear that the legislature has a big piece in determining what that number is going to be.
Any questions?
Yes.
I like to direct these to the director. Have you had to change your eligibility requirements for students since 1997? Have you lowered or raised those, or are we looking at basically the same eligibility requirements all along?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, and members of the committee, we have constantly evaluated our eligibility criteria, and this past year is probably the most significant. Our eligibility criteria for dependent students was 75% of median family income. Because of where we're at in funding, we lowered the income threshold to 55% of median family income, which is close to what the independent income thresholds are. So there just wasn't enough money to serve an expanding population, and so our goal was to target those dollars at the lowest income quartiles in our population.
Well, you've touched on what I'm trying to go to here. So you haven't really changed your eligibility requirements, but what you've done is you've gone deeper. Is that the result of a lack of funding by the state, or is it more being driven by a large number of students who qualify because of the economic recession we're in, or a combination of both?
I moseyed up here since it was really a commission decision to do that. Brian Clem again, Madam Chair, for the record. Really, it was lack of funding in this particular case, and it was a pretty big change. And for 20 years, we'd been at one level, 75% of median family income, and then we dropped it to 55%, and it took a lot of people out. And it really was funding in this particular case, even though there are expanded requests for our grant due to more people qualifying. But we were after the end of last session, prior to special sessions, something in 90% of our eligibles were being served. And by the time it all got retracted back over the course of special sessions, we were down into we were at 92%. And so just from a funding perspective, really, without a whole lot of increased enrollment in a quick period of just 1 year of losing money in special sessions, we were down to, I think we're at 51% now. And that's with changing the formula. We'd be at 49%. So really, funding. even though there has been enrollment, but that's not what drove the 40% decline in who were able to serve in just a 1 to 2 year period.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Marsh.
Yes, and I'm not sure if we asked the OSAC if they could track some way the percentage of recipients who completed a certificate or degree program or specific training program, if there was some way of finding out performance on that level, i.e., did the money go to make sure somebody was able to complete a program?
Madam Chair, Representative March, we did the budget note study that now Senator Schrader asked for, and it had that component in it. And what we found was that you were 27% more likely to go to school if you got the grant than if you didn't get it. So you're eligible, but you didn't get it because you ran out of money. Then once you got there, this is what we call persistence, you were 25% more likely to complete than if you lost it somehow. So it definitely led to an increase in people moving on and finishing because they didn't lose their finances, basically.
But what I think I hear you say, Representative March, is that you would be interested in a performance measure that tracks that over time.
If it's something that was able to be tracked, I mean, I understand you did a special study for that, and if we don't want to send you out, have to do special studies every year.
Sure.
But if there is some mechanism by which you can track that information, I think it'd be very valuable.
Yeah, we certainly would be happy to look at it. I know we spent a lot of time and energy to do it, but now that we set up the data set, maybe we could do it again. We could certainly try.
Something to look at for the future.
Madam Chair, Representative Marsh, members of the committee, we will look at that. There is a workload issue, and I think when we get into talking about the co-chair's budget and the unidentified administrative reductions, I'm on a collision path here as far as meeting information needs, so I just want to be mindful of that.
And that's my concern. I mean, if it's an easily generated percentage or report, then I would love it.
Understood.
I don't want to send you off.
Could we get some information back from you relating to that? And, Mr. Bender, could you put in whatever carries forward to the next legislative session that we've had this discussion, and if we're not able to put it in this time, that we would hope that the next group of people that undertakes this task would discuss it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Along those lines, Madam Chair, that information I remember seeing several months ago, and it is available. My memory of it was that the Opportunity Grant was very important in getting low-income kids started in school. The graduation rate at higher ed was slightly higher, several percentage points higher than those who did not receive it. But the important thing was at least they got a couple of years in. But we couldn't track them well if they dropped out, came back in, or went to different universities and graduated again. So it was very difficult to track what really happened to those individual students. And you were looking at ways of doing that. So you couldn't, all you could tell is if they left the school and didn't come back to that particular school because information came from the site. So it was difficult to track the information. What you did show was a huge and dramatic change for people who received the Opportunity Grant at the junior college level and then went on to university. Their graduation rates from university were much higher than those who started at university with or without the Opportunity Grant. So there's some very good information, the data you already have, that this program works extremely well, especially for low-income kids who have gone through the community college program and then gone forward. The other piece of it was that in private institutions, the Opportunity Grant appears to work extremely well also. And the money spent there, well, you all know my position on that, the money spent there are well used. And the graduation rates there are quite high. I know the graduation rates of private institutions are higher anyway because they have more individualized learning. But even taking that into effect, Opportunity Grants spent at private institutions appear to be doing a good job. So you've got a lot of good data. I think it needs to bring it together. And I'm going to share Representative March's position. I would take that and your first data goal here as the two most important things we can talk about. One, how many people are we serving? What's going on there? And what's the outcome of using that money? And I just, maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see that as part of your performance measures. And I think you've got the data or information close enough that would give us an idea. And the stuff I saw supports the program. It supports the program very well.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, members of the committee, message received. We will do our best to deliver on that if we can.
The other piece, Madam Chair, that I at least is, you know, sort of being the chair of the board to our CEO think about is, do we get the money through with a little overhead being removed? And so I'm standing here. I assume that's in there. But if I was going to think about it and contracting a service out in my computer business, I look at how much, what percent they're going to take before they do the service. And I think we do a good job of it, and that would be the one thing I also would want to make sure is if someone's going to make a judgment about us, that's something they ought to be looking at. If you're giving us money and you want us to get it straight to a student, what percentage of the dollar gets used administratively? I'm sure that's it.
The couple of points here that I do agree with Representative Bates and Representative March that when we're looking at the issue of funding from our perspective, The big question that we ask is, are we getting what we're supposed to be getting from the dollars that we're investing? And the big measure here is how we're being successful in moving students through to a degree. And so there needs to be that piece of information somewhere in what we receive, or we're not going to be able to see whether the programs are achieving the goals that they're set out to do. So I would very strongly urge you to be very creative and figure out a way to provide that information as one of your performance measures, because it truly is a gauge. I mean, we have a way now to figure out of the eligible students how many we're being able to set into a category that we can assist. Right. But we still have no way to know if those students that we're assisting are really reaching a goal or whether we're just, assisting.
On an ongoing basis, at least. I mean, we saw that budget note study, we did a survey of recipients and asked them what happened to you. But it was a kind of a one-time shot, and it took a lot of effort. So it sounds like what you're saying is if we could find a way to keep that type of deal going where we're asking people or through employment department or something, tracking them.
Well, or if there is a way that you can work with the database that the university system has to figure out what's going on, and then the database that you have within the Oregon Students Assistance Commission, because I recognize that you've got a community college component, and then you've got a four-year public and private component.
Sure.
And so the data tracking is somewhat difficult,
challenging,
complicated.
Sure.
I think that in terms of our ability to manage, that is a critical piece of information.
Yeah, I agree. I would want to know that, too, if I were you.
Madam Chair, as I understand it, your question is, what is our return on our investment in the Opportunity Grant? That's really what you're asking. And so we will go back and look at the databases and relationships and partnerships we have and make every effort to make that happen.
I think we'd be very interested in hearing back from that. And then relating to Brian's comment, talk to us about what is in here that shows us what your management costs are in relation to the grants that you're disbursing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do not have a specific measure relating to the cost effectiveness of the Opportunity Grant. I had our analysts take a look at that, and in measuring the number of opportunity grants that we are awarding and delivering based upon the general fund support that we receive in the grants division, it's about $6.41. But that also covers the administration of the Oregon, the nursing services program, rural health. We don't have concrete, specific, isolated costs associated with by program.
Well, I do think that there would be value into not disaggregating that information, but just giving having a performance measure that shows in the global sense from the operation of the agency, including all of the disbursement programs that you have, and all of the administrative costs that you have, what the ratio mm-hmm. is between the two.
I think so, too. The one thing, Madam Chair, that we just need to be mindful of is because our agency has a large federal responsibility, we have various audits and accounting with them, and they also like to see how much of what percentage of his time is being spent on what, and so we want to make sure everything essentially met both people's desires to see the percentages and whether that's the appropriate
percentage. And I think the value here would be in a trending, a look at it as right. it trended over time to ensure from our perspective that if the ratio changed, that there was a reasonable explanation for it.
Right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. I would just like to take us back to previous discussions, and again related to access and access for a particular group of students. The Oregon Progress Board tells us that we have a particular challenge when it comes to getting Latino students into college. This group, again, according to data from the Oregon Progress Board, is behind all other groups in access. And that suggests that we need to disaggregate the data, and we've talked about that before with you, and you have pledged to work with the university systems in sharing information around data and making sure that it is disaggregated. But that suggests that we may need or should have a performance measure that's targeted to telling us if we're making progress or not in the awarding of grants to those groups, Latinos and other people by race, ethnicity. Does that make sense? Have you thought about?
I definitely understand what you're asking. It seems to me when we, I was thinking about solutions, just assuming that potentially we needed to do as much outreach as possible, whether there was a disparity in whether our grants get to certain populations or not. I want to do as much outreach. The question regarding, no matter how much outreach we do or don't do, how does it result, how does it end up, so you can see that. There was some issue with race on some of our forms that were federal, and they're not on there currently. We have to work maybe to get a bit. Let's have Jeff answer.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordy, I think this ties in with the other measure that's talking about the return on investment of the opportunity grant. If we're working with the higher ed institutions, there's opportunity to identify that information in that process. So we will put that as a component of really an ongoing research project.
I do recall having discussion around this previously, and there were some issues around that you do collect the data for the federal side of it, but there are some constraints around being able to collect the data for other areas?
Chair Morgan, that is correct. We received the FAFSA data free application for federal student aid. It does not include race or ethnicity. And so we don't currently receive that information. We would have to go out in a partnership with the institutions.
Exactly, which is what you said that you would do. And, and all I'm asking is that let me be more explicit. Mm-hmm. You need a performance measure that's targeted in a way that says we're making progress or not with this specific group, which is the Latino population, which is currently behind all other groups
right.
in access to college. That's what we need to nail down.
So if you could see a number that said in 2003, 12% of our grants went to Latinos, and their population in Oregon was 18%, and in 2005, now it's up to 18, and they're at 22, that's the kind of thing you'd like to see.
Mm-hmm. Because the data's there. The universities have it. You just need to get it, collect it, report it, so that we can keep tracking our progress or lack thereof.
Make sure you tell them that, too, to work with us, please, and we'll be happy.
We have.
Okay, good.
And I was assured that you all were talking to one another, so keep talking.
Okay.
So if you could have a discussion on the logistics of being able to put that piece in, that would be helpful.
Great.
I'm looking at one here, which is 575-6, the percentage of annual dollars collected from average receivables. What does that mean?
We collect on defaulted student loans, and on average, if there's $100 out there, that percentage represents what portion of that $100 we collected that year. So,
okay,
for
so you have a what you're judging on is the average receivables that you have over the course of a year, the average amount of the receivables.
That is correct.
And then you're measuring the percentage that you recover from that number.
That is correct.
Thank you. Any more discussion on the performance measures? Mr. Bender, we kind of derailed you. Is there anything more you want to add?
Well, I just did want to add that when you look at the performance measures on the first page, where they're numbered -1, -2, -3, on the second page, these are the additional performance measures that are being developed in response to your request for additional information. So for the -1, where they were targeting or looking at the percent of students, you asked for dollar amounts and student numbers of students. So they've developed the -1A and 1B that were associated with their original -1. Similarly, the -2 amendment was college grant dollars awarded per FTE student ranking, and you had asked for additional information on that. And the -2A on the second page, you had asked for the actual dollar amount as opposed to what the ranking was. So these, if you look at the way that they've numbered these on the second page, you can see the relationship of these new measures to the older existing ones and the additional information that they have, that they are adding to their performance measures as a result of your earlier discussions. I will note, this is the acceptance of the performance measures is expected to be a subcommittee action, and I know you don't have a quorum right now, so I guess we'd hold this off to the future work session. But we would note that clearly the subcommittee, and we would put this into the budget report of the agency, had requested some additional work toward additional performance measures beyond those shown on either of these two pages relating to measurement of the impact of the opportunity grant on recipients' ability to achieve degree completions, to look at performance measures relating to management and administrative costs, and to look at performance measures relating to disaggregated data by race and ethnicity, with specific emphasis on the commission's service of students of Latino.
Thank you. Just for personal clarification, 575-1B, isn't a relationship between awardees and recipients? That just gives you the total number of people that got opportunity grants? Is that one?
These are the number of people who are actually collecting money.
Okay.
More people were awarded. That better be labeled just opportunity grant recipients, Mr. Sweetser, do you think?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that would be awardees.
Awardees.
Awarded. So
one moment, please. One moment, please.
Yes.
We love to attempt to confuse you with our language. It's one of our things.
Doing an excellent job. I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I stand corrected. That is recipients.
So we should scratch awardees off of there.
So this is the amount of people that actually collected grants.
Correct.
Okay. Can we have the language in that change then to reflect that this is the actual number of recipients? And then in 575-2A, right underneath that, college grant dollars per FTE student, what comprises college grants?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is our Oregon Opportunity Grant program.
So can we change that to say Oregon Opportunity Grant dollars per FTE student?
Yes.
Yeah, because there's no other grants in there.
I assume that's just a division. It's the number of amount of money you have divided by the number of full-time students in the entire system?
Correct.
Including public and private.
And we're using language that is, this is a national statistic that we're using national language. We'll change it.
And then, and does the FTE students include community colleges and public and private four-year colleges?
Madam Chair, I would ask Karen Crane, our policy and research person, to come to the table.
She's not head up and down, but please come.
Thank you, Karen.
I know it's a long time.
For the record, Karen Crane, Coordinator of Financial Aid Projects with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And, yes, I'd like to take a look at that. And we're looking at... Yes, that does include, that is out of the National Association of State Student Grant and Aid Administrators annual report, and they do include all FTE at public and private nonprofit schools in Oregon.
Can we have the language in that one reflect that the we're talking about Oregon Opportunity Grant dollars, and we're talking about FTE students in community colleges and public and private four-year universities.
And that language change would also be paralleled in the 575-2 measure on the first page. Because that is just the rank.
Yes, that's the idea. I think that'll make it easier for people to understand what's exactly being measured here. Anyone else have any questions about these representative fates?
Yes, Madam Chair. You have a large number of items here about the volume of loans that are outstanding, those that have not been paid, those that are being paid, and you're trying to track how successful we are in getting loans repaid. I don't know if this is the other rest of the committee would agree with this or not. That is interesting statistics, and I understand what you're trying to get to. I'm not sure it rises to the level of this committee of something we're vitally interested in. The things we talked about earlier may be of more value than that. Not to say this isn't important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's there. The other thing I wanted to ask about is 575-1A is the total amount of the opportunity grants awarded, $19,776,000, correct?
Yeah.
And then 575-3B is the amount of that came out of privately funded scholarships. Is that correct? So the difference is...
No, that's an addition.
An addition to.
Right.
Okay, so this addition, not subtraction. So the total amount is somewhere in the neighborhood of the number I'm used to, which is $30 million, $34 million, that range.
The separation there is opportunity grant is state-funded. The other is our privately funded scholarship programs.
Okay.
So those funds are all in the
They're
privately funded...
Additive, not... Subtracted.
Right, and completely separate programs.
What impresses me there, going back to earlier discussion about the governor's initiative, is that there's a substantial amount of money already flowing through OSAC from private funds, a substantial amount, almost a third of the funds are private and public. And I note that the private money has been growing dramatically since 1997. Is that correct?
That's very correct.
Where is that money coming from primarily?
Large portion of the growth, we deal with two very large foundations in Oregon. One is the Ford Family Foundation. The other is the Oregon Community Foundation, who is very active in, they have many educational scholarships that they have chosen to have OSAC administer. They, as has been mentioned before, are very active in investing money appropriately for many private entities. They do a wonderful job of investing, so money, a lot of scholarship money in Oregon stays with them for investment purposes, but is administered by OSAC because we have the full range of services. We have the need-based analysis. We have the ability to disperse to all schools in Oregon. So we are effective at administering the actual disbursements of the scholarships. OCF is very effective at investing the money for high returns.
Madam Chair, can I ask a few more questions?
Yes.
Is this flow-through money primarily, or are you trying to build up a corpus? And how would the potentially would the governor's program affect your ability to raise funds for this program?
Would you like to address that, Brian?
Actually, on a technical level, I need to ask about corpus, about whether I'm sure they are endowed funds. At least some of them are, aren't they?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the... We do both. We do pass-throughs, and if a donor wants to place a sum of money with us and have the interest earnings used to fund scholarships, we will do that as well. So it's a combination of the two.
And to the second part of your question, Representative Bates, I don't know for sure because I haven't been at the AEA dinner the governor referenced and talked to those folks. I belong to the Farm Bureau and some of those places. I don't know if they would want to give to his fund and not a fund that exists currently at our program and whether it would create competition or not. I'd like to think not, but obviously there's limited funds out there and they can only be directed so many places. And if the governor asks you to put it in a fund that really has this great purpose, I might be inclined to do that.
Especially if it flow back to your hands.
It would be nice if in either case it flowed back through us because we're good at getting money to the schools and students directly. But I have no idea what, you know, we have some folks who aren't here, unfortunately, who do, that's all they do is raise money. She would probably have a better sense of what the average donor might do in a given scenario depending on whether they kind of like the Oregon Community Foundation and they go to the annual lunch and they're already wedded to them and they're not going to go use something else or whether they would.
Thank you.
Any other comments relating to the performance measures? Again, committee, very good discussion. We cannot move these today because we're quorum challenged, but definitely have, I think, nailed down the issues that we were wanting to discuss. Shall we continue? We have losing more.
Thank you. Vote anyway.
No, go for it.
I did just want to spend a little bit of time just reviewing a couple items of relevance to this budget, which you are not expected to or being asked to make any decisions on right now. But just as a reminder of what the co-chair's budget for this particular agency, if you have your buff-colored sheet of paper and you flip it over on the back, this shows what is in both the co-chairs and the governor's revised budget for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And the governor and the co-chairs both include a $2.8 million supplement of general fund, which is designed to offset a reduction in lottery funds that resulted when, during the sixth special session, the corpus of the Education Stability Fund was transferred to the state school fund to help balance the budget. So both the governor and the co-chairs would provide general fund to make up that loss in lottery funds that occurred as a result of that action. In addition, I'm switching to the very bottom row here. It's hard to see on this sheet, but both the top row and the bottom row are shaded slightly. And the shading indicates that these items are in both the co-chairs and the governor's budget. Both contain additional reductions of approximately $100,000in administrative, general fund administrative support for the agencies. So that is something that is also shared in both budgets. Then there are some items, the three items in the middle are in the co-chair's budget, but this is a divergence between what's in the co-chair's and the governor's revised budget. The co-chair's budget includes an additional $6 million above the 2.8 for the Opportunity Grant Program. That $6 million would offset a $6 million reduction in the governor's balanced budget, the one that came to you at the beginning of the session. That $6 million reduction was the roll-up of the special session 5 cuts. So this would basically restore back the cuts that the agency had as a result of special session 5 and the failure of Measure 28 last January. Then there are two reductions in the co-chair's budget that are not in the governor's budget. One is to reduce the support for the Office of Degree Authorization Policy Research Section by $200,000 in general fund. That's approximately half of the general fund that is in the governor's budget for that particular function of the commission. The subcommittee was interested in looking at allowing the commission, through its Office of Degree Authorization, to charge fees for some of the activities for which it is not charging fees, specifically to grant the Office of Degree Authorization fee authority for its degree validation functions, and it's basically it's basic information functions where it's just providing information to the public. And this would, these are general fund supported currently. We did hear that it may be that the office has only a limited ability or would have a limited ability to collect fees in these areas, but do note that this was something that the subcommittee was interested in pursuing. You cannot do this in House Bill 5052. You would require a substantive bill to do that. So we are looking for a substantive bill that would allow you to grant fee granting authority to the Office of Degree Authorization in these areas. Finally, the governor's budget has a reduction in it of, or an elimination of, the former Foster Youth Scholarship Program. The amount that was in the governor's budget for that is about $99,000. The co-chair's budget would eliminate that funding. This was a program that was established in the 2001 legislative session to provide full tuition scholarships to college students who were formerly in foster care.
Questions or comments?
Is there another way, Madam Chair, for those youth to be served?
I think the discussion that we had in the subcommittee was that we would expect them to be getting opportunity grants.
Which is significantly lower, if that's what you're wondering.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, significantly. If you'd like me to comment on that piece.
Please.
We recommended eliminating the program as part of special session things also, really only because it was a new program, brand new, and the opportunity grant was underfunded. But if you're really trying to look at what these kids are looking at themselves, the state has become their parents at some early age. And a normal person getting an opportunity, not that they're not normal, that's not the right term, but the average person getting an opportunity grant, they may be able to try and get something from their parents, go to their parents for something. There's going to be some expected parental contribution. In this case, the state is the parent. So just having them get an opportunity grant, it's definitely in dollar terms going to mean significantly lower, maybe, you know, $1,300 versus what's our...
$4,000.
So they could, that individual could lose a large, 75% of what they'd been getting to go to school. It's an option that's better than not getting anything at all. This program didn't exist before last session. So, you know, that's sort of where we view it from. But it'd be a big deal to that former foster youth who's had no parents since some age when the state took that role.
Further questions, Senator?
It's just really important that we understand the impact on these youth. And the point that you make about the state's role, the state's parental role, is it's an important one. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Bender.
I think that pretty much takes us through.
Okay.
Unless there are any questions.
Yeah, what is the question mark up there on federal funds? What is that about?
Yes, that question mark, I didn't discuss the federal funds at all, actually, in this. If I can get back to your question in just 1 second, mm-hmm. and go to the row below that.
Okay.
If in that portion of the co-chair's budget where the $6 million is restored to the funding from the governor's level, we would anticipate receipt of $1.2 million in matching federal funds, which is the maximum amount of funding that federal funds that we expect to be available, regardless of what our level of state support is next biennium. So we would essentially get all of our federal funds back.
And Mr. Bender, this is the discussion that we got in earlier, that there actually is more general fund added back to this than would be required to achieve that level of federal funding. And what was the amount that was in excess?
The amount that it was in excess was about $4 million.
Is that included in the $6 million?
Yes.
Okay. Of the $6
million,
there only actually needs to be $2 million stored in order to be able to capture the maximum federal match.
The question mark that Senator Gordley was referring to was how much of these federal funds would we get? Would we get the full amount back if only the $2.8 million that was in the governor's revised budget were provided? And I do believe that is the case. I did, when we spoke the other day, you said you were going to double check that. I don't know if you were able to do that.
You and I talked about this, and the minimum needed total is about $35.5 million.
Okay, so this would then provide even at the $2.8 million level, mm-hmm. you would still get the $1,239,605
over the governor's balance budget. Yeah.
Well, for personal clarification, then, Mr. Bender. We could take the whole, and I'm not advocating for this, but we could take the whole $6 million out of the budget and still get the, no?
I'm sorry. I think I'm, if you took the whole $6 million out, let me, let me see your sheet there. I didn't believe on.
Which one?
The one that showed the, with colored bills. If we had if we had only the $2.8 million there, that would not, I was incorrect, I'm sorry. The number would be zero in federal funds.
Okay, so in order to get the federal funds, we would need to be adding an additional $2 million.
Yes.
Instead of 2.8.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay, I got it. Senator Gordy, did you have more questions?
I'm still.
We still have this question mark issue to deal with here.
Yeah, and I'm still real concerned about the former Foster Youth Scholarship. Frankly, I'm not feeling good about that.
About
we need to find $100,000 to keep that program, but let's move on.
Okay.
Madam Chair, just a process question. Are you going to talk more about the unidentified administrative reductions and reduced ODA support, or was that pretty much it, what has already occurred?
Well, we had been planning to these particular items here relating to the co-chair's budget adjustment.
Right.
We were going to be dealing with the subcommittee plan was to do that at the work session later.
Okay. I'd like to just comment at that time, or to add a couple cents now on those things if I could.
Please.
I don't know if I'll be able to be back.
We're up against the time that we have for the meeting today, so if we could have you reserve those comments until we come back and specifically discuss this issue, it would be.
That's fine. Absolutely. I'll bring cherries too, because cherry picking is in about 2 weeks, so I'll bring those. Or if you're still here in September and October, which you may be, I'll bring pears and apples.
You can bring us some
November,
pears,
maybe. Yeah.
Have we resolved the issue with the question mark under federal funds in the state support lost line
that
item?
That would be zero.
Okay. So that would be zero. And being as we are out of time and we have come to the end of the issues that we have scheduled to resolve, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 5052. Members, we will not be meeting tomorrow. Tomorrow is full. And we will also not be meeting on Monday. We will be meeting on Tuesday. And, Mr. Bender, can you talk to Senator Gordley and I about meeting? Actually, why don't we just, we'll get the schedules in our offices. Mm-hmm. Is that we'll meet your information?
Well, we're also talking to the public who's listening to the committee, right. So telling us on the record has some value.
And you'll let us know when you want us back?
We'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you.
The next week, the subcommittee will be looking at the Department of Higher Education Capital Construction Bill, as well as a public hearing on Senate Bill 437, which is a bill that would provide changes in the administration of higher ed. So Those are the two bills, and we may schedule them on Tuesday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Thursday. It's not clear yet, but not on Monday.
Thank you, Mr. President. And with that, this meeting is adjourned. Thanks for your work.
Yes.